Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, June 30th, 2016.
The General Assembly unanimously agreed that the strike should be lifted and is lifted from today till the end of September. This is just to give them chance or room to work out these allowances. And if it is not done within this period, in September we shall come back.
Those are sounds from lecturers who have ended their strike today in South Sudan. And the government officials say they will explain the new NGO law to local South Sudanese organizations.
I know some of you have a lot of difficulties and you are concerned. So some of these things are at our jurisdiction to ensure that you are registered and you operate legally in the country. You get funding and you continue with your activities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Professors and lecturers in South Sudan's five public universities have ended their strike. A spokesman for the Public University Staff Association says the government has paid the salary for April and May. But as Mungume Devs Rakarinj reports for VOA from Juba, the lecturers warn if the government fails to pay the allowances soon, they will go back on strike.
The General Assembly unanimously agreed that the strike should be lifted and is lifted from today till the end of September. This is just to give them chance or room to work out these allowances. And if it is not done within this period, in September we shall come back and then people can decide what to do.
That is Philip Finish Apollo, spokesman for the South Sudan Public University Staff Association, reading out resolutions at the end of lecturers' meeting in Juba today. Jafar Juma, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says they decided to end the strike because lecturers and professors understand the suffering endured by students.
I think it is good that we give a certain time, that we bring our students to a certain level, and then see what next will come from there. But still, there should be the conditions.
Those conditions, Juma says, include the government putting in writing its commitment to pay the lecturers back allowances and specifying a time frame within which the allowances will be paid. Juma says the government must also ensure that lecturers who were arrested by security agencies in connection with the strike be released from jail. Rose Pony Gore, an associate professor of medicine at the University of Juba's College of Medicine, says her colleagues deserve to be freed.
We should not forget our colleague that is in there. Because this association, if we just run after our money, that is going to be given. And what about the colleague?
University lecturers say two of their colleagues were detained for refusing to teach at the University of Bahar Ghazal in Wau. Lecturer Justo Wani Jada says lecturers felt they had no choice but to strike in order to force the government to improve the working conditions of public servants.
I think this is how things are tackled at this kind of institutions. Because if you don't tackle matters the way we have done it, then what will be the difference between the high institutions and then the general public? You can see that the struggle in the universities has actually produced fruits to the whole country. And I think we have to congratulate ourselves for being tough and strong and persevered.
Other strikes followed the lecturer strike, including one by judges who have not been paid in months. Government officials say they are trying to settle some of those claims and have vowed to cut government spending on non-essential items in order to come up with the money to pay employees' salaries. Professors and lecturers from the universities of Juba, Upper Nile, University of Bahar Al-Ghazal, Rumbek, and Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology have been on strike since May 25th. Students from several universities affected by the strike welcome the lecturer's announcement.
My name is Joseph Rinj Madut, College of Community Studies and Rural Development, Department of Rural Development, first year student. So we are very happy. This is what we have been waiting for. So we have spent almost a month now without lectures, and we are very happy that we will receive our normal lectures tomorrow. We call our government to look at this thing carefully, because it used to affect us when we used to spend more than a month without doing anything. Then it affects us mostly, those who used to come from a long distance. My name is Arcangelo Manut from College of Social and Economic Studies, Department of Economic, first year. Today we are happy that our lecturers, they have lifted strikes and then we are going to resume our lectures. It is something so grateful, and then we also appeal to our government that let our lecturers receive their salary, their allowances without delay, and then to let us going on with our education without disruption again.
My name is Makur Led. I'm from the College of Applied Industrial Sciences. I'm in third year. I'm doing industrial chemistry. If they have called up the strike, this is what we have been waiting for. Of course, we are here to study. So if they have called up, that is what we want.
Lecturers and professors will return to work tomorrow. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Authorities in South Sudan say the government is helping local non-governmental organizations to register and operate within the new requirements as stipulated in the new NGO law. The government spokesperson told reporters this week that any organization refusing to abide by the new law must leave the country. Nabil Biajo reports for VOA from Juba.
Local civil society organizations in Juba invited members of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission to their monthly forum today in Juba to better understand the new rules. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission is the government body tasked with enforcing South Sudan's new NGO law. Registrar General Deng Tok told civil society members he is there to help.
I know some of you have a lot of difficulties and you are concerned. So some of these things are at our jurisdiction to ensure that you are registered and you operate legally in the country. You get funding and you continue with your activities.
Rajab Mohandis is the executive director at the South Sudan Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDE, a local non-governmental organization operating in South Sudan. Mohandis says most local NGOs are confused about the new rules.
We had some difficulties with the national NGO Act, and so we discussed with the RRC, invited them to come and talk to the civil society about the Act to explain the whole thing to the civil society and also listen to the concerns of the civil society about the Act.
Civil society activists are seeking clarification from the government on the differences between the humanitarian and advocacy work in South Sudan. Mohandis says the meeting with government officials was cordial.
We raised some of these concerns to them, and the discussion was fruitful. They responded positively. They have taken up these concerns, and they promised to forward them to the leadership of the RRC and also the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs so that they're able to discuss them and provide appropriate response to the concerns raised by the civil society.
The Executive Director of Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says this is the first time the government has shown willingness to engage in discussions with civil society groups about the new act since it became law. Edmund Yakani says he is happy with the government's gesture of goodwill.
At least now the culture of dialogue, the window of dialogue, the door of dialogue is open with our Relief and Rehabilitation Commission. And this dialogue open give us an opportunity of raising our concerns that we feel are more practical concerns, and good enough that also the registrar of the non-governmental organization says they will consider our concerns.
Yakani and other civil society activists say they hope the government is serious about working with local NGOs.
We have duty and responsibility to ensure that our concerns, they took it seriously, and we wish that this can't end up in this meeting. We need to call another meeting to see how much of our concerns were taken seriously.
The NGO Act regulates the work of all non-governmental organizations in South Sudan. Besides the requirement for NGOs to register with the government, the new law requires them to abide by certain directives pertaining to what areas of South Sudan the organizations may operate in, providing specific details about their budgets and who they can and cannot hire. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo.
South Sudan moved from the top most fragile state in the world to the second in its year's fragile index, state index. Although the ranking appears to be a slight improvement from last year, one data analyst from the Washington-based Fund for Peace says it is nothing to celebrate. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
The index, which ranks 178 countries worldwide every year, focuses on 12 indicators, including poverty, economic decline, security, human rights, and the plight of refugees and IDPs. South Sudan went from the number 4 spot in 2013 to having the dubious distinction of holding the number 1 spot as the most fragile country in the world in 2014 and 2015, then dropping to number 2 this year. Nate Haken is a senior associate at the Fund for Peace.
Overall, the risks remain still quite high. Humanitarian conditions remain precarious in the region, especially as regards IDPs. Economic conditions are difficult. So overall, there's been a slight improvement, but conditions still remain quite high risk.
The International Monetary Fund said earlier this month that South Sudan's economy fell 5.3% last year as the South Sudanese pound depreciated by close to 90% after the country's central bank switched to the black market rate in December. The IMF also warned that South Sudan's inflation rate is close to 300% this year. Many South Sudanese have said they can no longer afford basic necessities. Haken says South Sudan's economic crisis played a large role in this year's ranking, but the humanitarian crisis, including a dire year-long food crisis, was also of major concern. Haken says government leaders must look at the big picture.
State building is a long-term proposition. It doesn't happen automatically. It takes leadership and it takes a lot of patience. But one thing that's very important is that there be long-term commitments by those within country as well as the international community. So for those who hoped that a sustainable state would happen automatically overnight, that's just not the case.
Haken says government officials must take strong, decisive actions to right the wrongs of the past.
When we talk about fragility, we need to think more broadly than just about violent conflict alone. We got to be thinking also about the humanitarian conditions. We got to think about economic factors. And so when we look at conflict risk, it's very important to take a holistic and integrated approach and not just look only at the political dimensions and the security dimensions. Because that's the only way that sustainable security will ultimately take place.
South Sudan faces many challenges in its attempt to stabilize. UN agencies warned this week that up to 4.8 million people in South Sudan will face severe food shortages in the coming months. That's the highest level since the conflict erupted more than 2 years ago. Information Minister Michael McQuay could not be reached for comment. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, in Uganda, one doctor looks after 25,000 patients. Find out why after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think is most important to live a good life?
You need to work hard, yeah, because, you know, when God helps, you also have to do your part and work hard. And also friends are a big thing in your life as it goes on. So friends who are loyal, God, and hard work bring out the best in a person.
Stay happily. You don't have any regrets. You live in every moment you live.
To live a good life, one, you must be simple and humble. Okay? Two, you must be honest so that people can love you.
Good life I am seeing is having a free life, a life without enemies. Secondly, a simple life, a life not life of bragging, a life of saying I am this and this. No. Lastly, life of holiness also.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. In Uganda, one doctor is assigned to every 25,000 people. Healthcare can be particularly hard to access in rural areas, but a new medical hotline means certified doctors and pharmacists are just a phone call away. Elizabeth Pollard has more for VOA from Kampala.
The phones don't actually ring that much at the office of the Medical Concierge Group in Kampala. People primarily contact them via WhatsApp and other messaging platforms. Using social media keeps the overhead down and allows the group to offer the 24-hour hotline service for free. Dr. Yvette Wibibara, who works at the call center, says the questions often reflect local health outreach initiatives.
Certain seasons, they publicize about health topics, menstruation, immunization. So depending on what's going on with the UNICEF publications, that's what we get here most. The other platform, we have incoming and outgoing calls. There we go.
The man on the phone has a question about his wife. He's worried she's suffering from a post-childbirth complication. The hotline gets about 50,000 questions a month. They also bring in specialists. When VOA visited their office, a Ugandan cancer specialist was doing an hour-long tweet-up, taking and answering questions on Twitter. Workers at the center say they spend a lot of time correcting common health myths, such as vaccinations are dangerous or that contraception causes long-term damage to women. The platform also helps people who are too embarrassed to broach traditionally taboo subjects with their local healthcare provider, says Dr. John Mark Buonaca.
The questions are quite varied and spread out, but a lot of the questions, especially from the young people, are on sexual and reproductive health issues. Things like, how do I use a condom? Where do I get testing for HIV? Where do I get post-abortal care? Or if I want to do abortion, what kind of services are available? What kind of services are not available? Things like emergency contraception, my condom broke during sexual intercourse, or I would just didn't use any form of protection, but I would want to get services.
Buonaca says many also call in to find out where their nearest healthcare provider is located, as the Health Concierge Group keeps records of doctors and specialists around the country. The group hopes to expand its service, not just here in Uganda, but throughout the region. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
Cameroon says 28 people were killed in a double suicide bombing late yesterday that targeted a video club and a mosque in the far northern part of the country near the border with Nigeria. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Yaoundé.
Midji Yawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says the two teenage suicide bombers crossed the border from Nigeria's Borno state late Wednesday. One detonated his explosives at a popular spot where youth had gathered to watch films, while the other went to a local mosque. The governor said officials believe the bomber may have intended to hide there and attack the faithful who attend morning Ramadan prayers in large numbers. Midji Yawa said 13 people are confirmed dead and many more are wounded. Speaking to VOA by phone, the governor said Boko Haram has been targeting the area over the past months. He says the terrorist group has been using the long and porous border to steal food and money and transport them to Nigeria. Cameroon's government spokesman, Issa Chiruma Bakari, says the military has been deployed to seal that part of the border.
Cette proximité, cette frontière commune que nous avons avec le Nigeria.
He says the fact that the same people with the same language and descendants are found on both sides of the border makes it very difficult to identify strangers. He says the military will investigate whether the suicide bombers benefited from any local collaboration. Earlier this month, Cameroon deployed 1,000 additional soldiers in the north as part of a fresh regional offensive against Boko Haram. Since it started in 2009, the Boko Haram insurgency has killed over 20,000 people and displaced 2.7 million more. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The new U.S. envoy to Somalia, who was sworn into office on Monday, will be the first American ambassador to that nation in 25 years. He will take up his post as Somalia faces a number of crucial issues, including insecurity, an upcoming election, and the potential closure of the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya. VOA's Jill Craig asked Somalis living in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, how they feel about the U.S. finally installing a new ambassador.
Monday's installment of Stephen Schwartz as the new ambassador to Somalia was a landmark in U.S.-Somali relations. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who officiated the ceremony, said Somalia has made significant strides in rebuilding its state in the past 3 years.
It's precisely because this moment represents so much possibility, so much potential, that President Obama has chosen as his representative a diplomat of unmatched caliber and a public servant of unrivaled heart.
State collapse is the main reason for the long U.S. diplomatic absence from Somalia. In 1991, the U.S. embassy in Mogadishu closed after Somalia's military regime was overthrown and violence erupted between warring clan militias. In late 1992, President George H.W. Bush deployed U.S. troops to Somalia to support a U.N. aid mission aimed at relieving mass starvation. But 10 months later, 18 American soldiers were killed in Mogadishu by rebels who shot down two U.S. helicopters in the Black Hawk Down incident. The United States withdrew its troops the next year. After 2 decades of war and chaos, it was only in 2012 that Somalia achieved some measure of stability with the creation of an internationally backed government. But security remains a problem as the militant group Al-Shabaab continues to launch attacks in Mogadishu and elsewhere, a situation noted by the new U.S. envoy.
It's time for Somali authorities to establish a responsive and effective Somali National Army to defeat Al-Shabaab and unify the country.
Abdi Dahir Mohamed Sirad, a Somali living in Nairobi, believes security is key for Somalia and wants Schwartz to make it a priority.
I think the United States needs to help with the military building the Somali national forces, which can actually liberate that country from any group that is actually jeopardizing the peace in that country.
Elections scheduled for August represent a significant undertaking for Somalia, which is why some Somalis wish Schwartz could have been posted sooner.
We wish he came a year before, because right now the elections are just a month away, about two, three months away. And we cannot do much as far as a lot of the logistics is concerned.
Kenya's announcement that it will close the Dadaab refugee camp, whose 300,000 residents are mostly Somalis, will be another issue among many for Schwartz, says Horn of Africa analyst Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad.
The road ahead, it's a very, very complicated one. But if he's smart enough, if he understands the dynamics of the region, if he understands what they call the Somali, you know, communities, the culture and norms, he can easily overcome all those problems. And I wish him good luck.
U.S. officials expect Schwartz will arrive in Mogadishu by the end of July. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Professors and lecturers have ended their strike at 5 public universities across South Sudan. They walked off the job a month ago after not being paid their salaries or allowances for months. A public university staff association spokesman says the government paid their salaries for April and May, but lecturers warn that if the government fails to pay their allowances soon, they could decide to go back on strike again in 3 months. Jaffer Juma, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says they decided to end the strike because lecturers and professors understand the suffering that students have endured. Juma says the lecturers are demanding that the government put in writing its commitment to pay the lecturers their back allowances and specify a time frame as to when their back allowances will be paid. Juma says the government must also release from jail two lecturers who were arrested in connection with the strike. Rose Pony Gore, an associate professor of medicine at the University of Juba's College of Medicine, says her colleagues deserve to be freed. Professors and lecturers have agreed to return to work tomorrow. South Sudan government officials say they will explain the new NGO law to national non-governmental organizations so they can register and operate within the new guidelines. Officials say they don't want the work of civil society in South Sudan to be interrupted, and so they will gladly help them through the new procedural requirements. Local civil society groups in Juba invited members of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission to their monthly forum today in Juba to answer questions about the new rules. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission is the government's body tasked with enforcing South Sudan's new NGO law. Registrar General Deng Tuk Tok told civil society members today that he is there to help, saying the government will ensure that the national NGOs are registered by the deadline, which is the end of next month. Civil society activists asked about unclear language regarding the differences between humanitarian NGOs and other NGOs working on advocacy, gender issues, and good governance. They also expressed concerns about the fast-approaching deadline to register. Edmund Yakani, Executive Director of Community Empowerment for Progress Organizations, says this is the first time that the government has shown willingness to engage in discussions with civil society groups about the new act since it became law. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Fitina Yanini by Black Boggy. We've been listening to Black Boogie with the song Fitina Yanini. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Chana pipi, izi taitoni zetu Unafanya nini hapo, wajameni sinatabu Seven day, bado kula hata kulala Chana miuma, wajameni minastabu Chichote unacho, hawa jameni mitafly Mitafly, mitafly, yeah
Haka mungu, ukikosa lao Otapata kazo na ukipata lao Otakosa kazo, ukikosa lao Otapata kazo na ukipata lao Otakosa kazo Panga, my sayake, miyake. That's it, na penda.
Badla, amama jengonia. Pichin, na kwa disio. Ejo mini kelemu.